con el under $3 menu de McDonald's, un McChicken es solo $1.50. Resulta que ser el héroe de tu primita solo te cuesta $1.50. Por un McChicken, good deal. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
It is Friday night. Welcome back, SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. Thank you so much for joining us. I am your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell. As always, before we get underway with our next segment, think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. They are close, convenient, and they are known for their guaranteed everyday low price. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store today. O'Reilly's, better parts, better prices every single day. As promised, it is time in our next segment. We're going to do a full recap. Masters 2018. We also will take some time to perhaps preview this weekend's action, and Patrick Reed becomes the fourth consecutive first-time major winner to capture the Masters title last Sunday, and it was just an incredible week at Augusta National Golf Club. His final round score of 71, and very exciting to watch it all unfold. Delighted to have back with us, as it is time to go inside the ropes with PGA Pro and author, that is Larry Miller, and get his thoughts. Good evening, Larry.
Good evening. Good evening, Alyssa.
Well, it was very exciting. So what were some of your biggest takeaways from the 82nd Masters?
The biggest surprise to me was Tiger's performance. I really thought he would be in the mix at that tournament, given his history there, his comfort level there, and the fact that he had such good finishes in his last three starts. And so I was really surprised at that, especially coming out of the gate with his first two rounds, being four over. To me, that was the biggest surprise. And then, another takeaway was the fact that, and we've talked about this many times, about how in these big tournaments the stars seem to come out. The cream comes to the top, and we saw the leaderboard, just littered with all the big names on the weekend, which made it a very exciting tournament. But it seems to always happen there, and one reason it happens so much at Augusta is the nuances of that golf course, that the experienced players who have played it many, many times and had success there, tend to keep having that success because they know the course so well. And then, of course, my other thought on it was I was really amazed at how Patrick Reed kept his wits about him.
Yes.
When all those superstars were just firing shots at him and the roars coming around the golf course, you would think it would unnerve most people, but he seemed pretty unflappable, and he sucked it up, and he from 11 on, he didn't make a bogey and made a birdie.
Our PGA News and Notes continues with Larry Miller in just a moment.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back to hour number two at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Tonight, it's a special program. We're doing a full recap of the 2018 Masters. Right now, let's rejoin Larry Miller inside the ropes. Hey, we are inside the ropes. Larry Miller, who joins us each and every week at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, former PGA professional and author. His book, Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental, What He Never Told the World. I want to back up a moment. You started off talking about Tiger Woods. It seemed like, leading into the Masters, and I'm thinking about our conversation from last week, he perhaps was the overwhelming favorite. Do you think expectations, they were perhaps too high on Tiger Woods? He did tie for 32nd.
I think everybody's was because of what happened the last three starts and the way he's come back. And it's, and everybody wanted so bad for him to contend and make a, America loves a comeback.
Yes, we do.
This would be a monumental, epic comeback if he wins a major, and everybody wanted it to happen. But I think, in reality, he just has not had enough starts back during his comeback to be able to handle it. And even though he's playing well, and it looks like his swing is back and his game is pretty much back, he still has to get some tournament rounds under his belt before I think he can start consistently, shooting under par rounds.
Larry, last week when you were on the program, I asked you about how much pressure there is in these major championships. Winning is everything, especially when you're talking about these top players. What happened to Rory? I mean, he talked about how all the pressure was on Patrick Reed, but ultimately he was the one that faded on the final day.
Well, you know, a number two, he had that, what, 3 or 4 foot eagle putt after that sensational second shot. And he had a chance, if he makes that putt, after just two holes to draw even with Reed. And he missed that short putt, and then he missed another short putt. And I think his confidence was eroded because he's thinking to himself, gee, I'm hitting great shots in there, and I can't make the putt. And so, you know, I think from there his game unraveled. And then it sort of snowballs. You know, when one part of your game goes and your confidence goes, it eats away at the rest of your game. And the next thing you know, he couldn't hit it fairway, and when he did, he couldn't hit the green.
Yeah.
And then when he did miss the green or hit the green, he'd get it up there and miss a putt. And so it just went from one thing to another. And I don't think, looking at his demeanor, I don't think he was choking. I don't think it was the pressure. I think, you know, I think missing, when you miss short putts early in a round, it's really devastating to the rest of the round and your confidence, even for the great players. And so those 3-4 footers, well, those are the money putts, and you have to make those.
Yeah, you got to capitalize on those. Regardless, it was an exciting Masters. Patrick Reed, 27 years of age, who attended college in Augusta, beat out Ricky Fowler and Jordan Spieth by 1 and 2 strokes, respectively. So this is his first major championship. Larry, I'd love for you to share with the listeners tonight, what do you appreciate the most about his game?
Well, I think his guts, you know, his courage under fire, you have to appreciate. He's a very good iron player. He doesn't miss a lot of greens. You know, he's not, he doesn't have the greatest short game in the world, although he's a better than average putter. But around the greens, you know, he's not the best. But he doesn't miss a lot of greens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of one thing makes up for another. But I think all in all, and look at his Ryder Cup, you know, his Ryder Cup performance and the way he handled this pressure down the stretch, I think you have to admire most about him is his bulldog mentality. They talk about that on the telecast a lot, and that's what it's like. He just does not give in and won't give an inch. And, boy, that's what you want in the majors and then things like the Ryder Cup where it means so much in a team match.
Is that a trait that can be taught, or is that something you are born with? Your ability to, as you're talking about, I mean, he really embraced the pressure. His ability he can come across kind of cold and just, you know, icing out his competitors.
I think you're born with it. I think, and here's what I think. I think that, and I've said this many times, I think to be a successful PGA Tour player on a world-class level, it takes a certain emotional makeup. You have to be able to stay calm in the midst of chaos. Some people do not have the emotional makeup to deal with it. And, you know, some have a marginal ability to deal with it. And those are the lesser players. But the guys that can go out there under the most extreme pressure and perform their best, that takes a certain emotional makeup. And I think you're born with that. Either you have it or you don't. And so it's not something you can cultivate. You can do all the sports psychology you want and the breathing and the stay in the present and all the stuff. But if you get jittery when the heat gets on, none of that's any good, you know. And it's the ones that stay calm. Look at Jack Nicklaus, you know. He was at his very, very best when the most pressure was on him. And so those are things that the great players just have innately.
Put some perspective on Patrick Reed on his cut shot. You know, that helicopter finish, I've never seen anything like that. It's definitely unorthodox, but you know what? Larry Miller, it's very effective.
Well, he draws the ball. He hits his natural shot at right to left in the draw, and when he starts missing it, it goes way left. So to counteract that, he has to try to hold the face open as it comes through the ball, not let it square up or close. And the only way to do that is to not let the hands cross over. So he gets down to the ball and she sort of blocks it and does not allow us. It's kind of like a bunker shot where you slide the club under the ball and you don't let the hands cross over. It's the same thing. He's doing that with the driver. And he slides that club down, you know, square and a little bit open through the ball, and it creates this little cut shot. It doesn't go as far as the draw, but it's very controllable and very reliable.
Patrick Reed wins his first major championship, 2018 Masters winner. Of course, Patrick Reed. You know, here's a gentleman. I didn't know a lot about him, Larry, and apparently he has a complicated past. And I wanted to hear your thoughts tonight about the impact of him winning the Masters on his personal image. I was unaware that he had a strange relationship with his parents. And to me, that is just absolutely heartbreaking news. I hope at some point that there could be some healing there and some unforgiveness.
It's a little sad. And he's got two children, two young children, who have never met their grandparents, his parents. And, you know, they need their grandparents in their lives. They need that family feeling and family unity and family structure of the whole family. And I'm just hoping that after this win, that someone that Patrick trusts and respects,
yes,
can act as a mentor and just talk to him and explain to him that life's too short to have these things. And, you know, you can't let, you know, and listen, to be a great player like that, you almost have to be a bit self-centered. We talked about that. That's part of the emotional makeup. You have to be detached and almost an assassin-like mentality. But at the same time, you know, when you're off the golf course, you can be a nice guy. And someone has to get him aside and explain that, you know, the family structure is important for his kids and for him and for his whole family. And I just hope that someone steps up and acts as a mentor and gets him to try to heal this situation.
Hey, we are Inside the Ropes. Former PGA professional author Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental, What He Never Told the World, a dear friend of our program. That is Larry Miller. And as we get ready to close out our segment tonight, Larry, talk to me about what does the Masters mean to you? Because I was listening to Michael Breed earlier this week, and he had an opportunity to go one-on-one with Gary Player, and it was just so cool to listen to him, how much he loves the Masters and what has, you know, his love for the game of golf and just how special the Masters tournament really is.
Well, myself, being a traditionalist in the game, a real solid traditionalist, you know, that I love the Masters. It just personifies and exemplifies everything about tradition. And if I could turn my career back and start over, the one tournament I would quest to win would be the Masters above all. It just, you know, it's everything about it, but it's mostly the tradition, Bobby Jones, and,
oh, yeah,
you know, and look at the winners. And I think that's the one. If you would poll the players, I think, you know, the U.S. Open would be a close second, but I think the Masters is number one on everybody's list, just about.
Hey, Larry Miller has been with us tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We are actually going to be off next week. The Big E will be in the Big Apple in New York City, and we will talk here in just a couple of weeks. Thank you so much, Larry, and have a great weekend.
Great. You too, and enjoy New York, and talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Absolutely. Hey, come on back. Much more coming your way here in hour number two, the fastest 2 hours in radio, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Alyssa Walker-Campbell, welcome back. SB Nation Radio, it is Friday night, and as promised, it is time to go around the horn, and we have got a very special book review this evening. We are going to be shining the spotlight on a new book. It is titled Singles and Smiles, How Artie Wilson Broke Baseball's Color Barrier. But first, we always have to take time to recognize our corporate partners and sponsors. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. They are close, convenient, and they are known for their guaranteed everyday low price. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store today. O'Reilly's, better parts, better prices every single day. Well, as I had just mentioned, we are shining the spotlight on Galen White's brand new book, Singles and Smiles, How Artie Wilson Broke Baseball's Color Barrier. And it is time now to welcome in Mr. Galen White to the program for the very first time. How are you on this Friday?
I'm very good, Alyssa. Thank you very much.
Well, it's a true honor to have you on the program, and we just want to extend congratulations to you. This is a compelling, a fascinating read, and I want for all of our audience and our listeners out there, we want to learn more about Artie Wilson. From what I understand, he was the best shortstop in baseball way back in the 40s.
From 1944 to 1948, he played in the Negro Leagues, and he was an all-star every year. And, of course, those were the war years in organized baseball, or white folks' ball, as some of the black players called it.
Yeah.
A lot of the best players were off in the military. So Artie clearly was the greatest shortstop in the game at that time. Now, history is proof that Jackie Robinson was the right one, the right man to break baseball's color barrier. But Artie Wilson was also considered by Branch Rickey, and had he chosen Artie, I believe that the record shows that Artie would have succeeded as well. He didn't get a chance to play in the big leagues until 1951. He was the 13th black to play in the majors, and he broke in with the Giants in 51. Unfortunately, the Giants had a very solid double play combination. They had Alvin Dark at shortstop and Eddie Stanky at second, and Artie, by that time, was 30 years old. So he had just a cup of coffee in the majors. But in his prime, there's no question that Artie Wilson would have been a good choice as the first black in organized baseball.
Singles and Smiles recognizes Artie, you know, for just what his body of work and what he did in the minor leagues, for what Jackie did in the majors. I want you to share, you know, just this fascinating account of his life story and his career. What was your goal in this book?
Well, I was led to Artie by a ballplayer named Chuck Stevens. He's currently the oldest living ballplayer. He's 99 years old. And back in the 70s, I was talking with Chuck Stevens, and he made this comment. He said that Artie carried the banner of the black man well when it was important. The only guys who get credit for integrating baseball are the guys with big league careers. But the Artie Wilsons were just as important as the Jackie Robinsons. They handled themselves in a difficult time with great dignity. Now, that was his quote. I was fascinated to find out more about Artie Wilson, so I traveled to Portland, Oregon. I spent a weekend with him, went to church with him, had dinner with him, had breakfast with him. I was just fascinated with this man. He was a very gentle man, very soft-spoken, very articulate, although he didn't graduate from high school. His only regret, actually, he said he would do the same thing all over again. His only regret had to do with someone else. His regret was that Josh Gibson didn't get a chance to play in the majors. That was the kind of man that he was. Later in the 1990s, I visited Artie on two different occasions during that decade. And on one of them, my wife was with me, and she met him. And I always remember her comment. She said, "What a gentleman."
Oh, wow.
That was, his nickname was the Birmingham Gentleman.
It was.
He was also a gentleman, a kind man. And his whole approach to things, of course, he was called all the names that Jackie was, and he put up with many of the same things that Jackie did. But his whole approach to things was, if you called him a name, and of course they called him all sorts of names, but he just smiled, and then he'd hit a single, and then he'd smile again. And he won people over with his smiles and his singles, a lot of them.
It's a fascinating account of Artie Wilson's life and career. What did you find out about his parents and his upbringing?
Well, his father, he saw only once. His father was in the room at his niece's house, and nobody had told him his father was in the room. Of course, he didn't know who his father was until later he was told. So, in effect, Artie wouldn't know his father if he walked into the room, and this happened when he was playing baseball. So he only saw his father on that one occasion. His mother raised him. His mother died when she was in her early 40s, but his mother brought him up. He revered his mother. She taught him, Artie says, she taught him to pay no attention to name-calling. She said, people are going to call you names. They're going to call you all sorts of names. And she says, don't let anything hurt you. The only thing that hurts is going to be a lick. And so he paid no attention to names.
Yeah.
And of course, she was very athletic in her own right, and so she ran along with him. She played ball with him.
Uh-huh.
His mother was a tremendous influence in his life, and I think that's why he was so gentlemanly, so kind. The reason he quit high school was to work and help support his mother so that she wouldn't have to work as hard. She was a maid, and she did other odd jobs, but he quit high school so he could support his mother. So he was that kind of man. He was a very gentle man on the field, both on the field and off. He never got kicked out of a ball game, never argued with an umpire. His philosophy was you can't do a team any good sitting on the bench.
That's right.
And you've got to be on the field. And he loved baseball, and he loved to be on the field. If you look at the records, his career batting average in the Negro Leagues of .376 is the third highest in history. He played in the Birmingham Industrial Leagues, which was sort of a proving ground for the Negro Leagues. He played 7 years in the Negro Leagues, and his career batting average there was .438. And then, of course, in organized baseball, the term organized baseball has always bothered me because it suggests that the Negro Leagues or anything else were disorganized, and they were not. But in organized baseball, in the 10 years that he played in the minors, his career batting average was .312. Most of his hits were singles. His first year, by the way, in organized baseball, 49, he won the Pacific Coast League batting title. And the Pacific Coast League at that time was considered just a notch below the majors. So there's no question in my mind that if Artie had been given a chance to play every day in the majors, that he would have accomplished there what he did in the minors.
Hey, author Galen White with us tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We are talking about singles and smiles. It is just a well-deserved tribute to a great man and player, and the reviews have absolutely been fantastic. I'd love for you to share with our listeners tonight, talk about some of the photographs that you included in the book.
Well, almost all of them show Artie smiling, and yeah, that wasn't hard to do because almost every photograph...
That made your job easy, yeah.
almost every photograph I came across of Artie showed him smiling. One of the things that's interesting is that there's a great illustration in the book of him and Lionel Hampton. Artie was popular with other celebrities. Joe Louis was a big Artie Wilson fan. Whenever Joe Louis was near where Artie was playing, Joe Louis went to the ball games to see Artie perform. Think of Willie Mays. If Willie Mays, of course, the 12th time All-Star, Hall of Famer, of course, probably the greatest center fielder of all time. Willie and Artie were teammates on the 48 Black Barons. Artie hit .402 that year, and Willie, that was his first year in pro ball. And so the team sort of adopted Willie because he was a young man. But I got a quote from Willie. I interviewed Willie for the book, and he said, "Artie was one of the guys who watched out for me at Birmingham in 1948. In turn, I watched Artie hit .402. That was a lesson in hitting that I always remembered." I also spoke with Orlando Cepeda. Artie was a big star in Puerto Rico. He played 7 years in the Puerto Rican League. And Orlando Cepeda's father was a teammate of Artie Wilson. His father was Pedro Cepeda. But I remember talking with Orlando, and the first thing he said to me was, "I loved Artie Wilson."
Mm-hmm.
He said, "He inspired me to be a ball player. Not only the way he played in the field, but one of Artie's nicknames was Dude. And that was because he dressed so well. He wore these Kangol berets, and he also wore these bebops. And then if he wore a suit, it was always the most fashionable suit around. So he was very well dressed, and he put forth an image for the black man at that time that was you couldn't help but respect and like him.
And Galen, Artie Wilson, he was the last 400 hitter in, what, 1941?
1948. Ted Williams,
okay,
in 1941, of course, hit .406. And most baseball historians say Ted Williams, last 400 hitter. And, of course, they're ruling out entirely Negro League baseball. Now, admittedly, the stats for Negro League baseball are a little spotty. There were a lot of games they played that they didn't keep them, but the ones that they kept for that particular season in 1948 showed Artie hitting .402. So, I accept that. Those were Negro League statistics, and that's what they released. There's another thing about Artie. You know, some of his nicknames, I think, are quite revealing. The Birmingham Gentleman, of course, is one of his nicknames. He was also known as the Octopus. He played shortstop, and it seemed like he had eight arms because he got to so many balls. In Puerto Rico, they called him the ground sweeper.
Uh-huh.
And in the Coast League, they had a nickname for him called Houdini. And that was because he was a left-handed hitter, and everything he hit was to the left side. And so the defense would overshift to the left side, but he still found a way to dump the ball somewhere between the fielders on the left side. And, of course, another nickname was Artful Artie. That was because how he could dump a ball between the defensive players and also because of the way he played defense. And finally, in Sacramento, which was his last year in pro ball, and that was in 1957, and the Giants, of course, arrived in San Francisco in 58 with Willie Mays to say, "Hey, kid." Well, they called him in Sacramento Mr. Hey Hey.
Well, it is a fascinating read. Congratulations, Galen. We look forward to another conversation, okay?
Thank you, Alyssa.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Much more coming your way. SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Hey, welcome back, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker Campbell. As always, we've got to pause and recognize the folks that power our program. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. They are close, convenient. They are known for their guaranteed everyday low price. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store today. O'Reilly's, better parts, better prices every single day. As promised, our Masters recap coverage, it does continue, and it certainly was a dramatic final round at the 82nd Masters. Certainly, we have to tip our hat to Patrick Reed, who wins and holds off Ricky Fowler and Jordan Spieth for his very first major. It was incredible to watch. And our next guest, you know what? He was there in Augusta. Such an honor to have with us for the very first time, renowned golf instructor, the 2007 Teacher of the Year. And we are so proud. He is a part of our network right here at SB Nation Radio. Saturday mornings, you got to check him out. 9 a.m., that's right, Eastern Time. The Charlie Epps Golf Hour. Let's give a warm welcome for Mr. Charlie Epps. Good evening, Charlie.
Good evening, Melissa. You do that so well.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you very much. Well,
set the tone.
Well, you certainly set the tone with so many fantastic golfers, and we are very excited to have you on the program tonight to get into that and also to recap the 82nd Masters. I mean, the anticipation was so fantastic for this year's event. I love what Jordan Spieth said. He explained that essentially this is our Super Bowl, and it was, as I mentioned in the open, such a dramatic final round. What were your takeaways from the Masters?
It was electric all week, you know, with Tiger Woods coming back, and he had a chance to, you know, be competitive, and the young guys with Jordan and Thomas and, you know, and Patrick Reed was an afterthought.
Yeah.
And for him to step up and do what he did, so happy for he and his wife and his team, and he's from Houston, and but more importantly, he's misunderstood. He's a good guy,
okay,
and he's going to be a great champion.
Well, the 2018 season just overall, Charlie, has been so exciting. And here Patrick Reed becomes the fourth consecutive first-time major winner to capture the Masters title on Sunday and, you know, finishes off just with that final round score of 71. The sport of golf, Charlie, it's in a really good place right now. Would you agree?
Oh, sure. It really is. I mean, the game has grown. It's got great events. We just witnessed one of the best. And there's a lot of people playing golf, almost 30 million people enjoying the game. But the Masters makes for such great television. And on Sunday afternoon, there's not many people that are away from their television, and that included me. Boy, I just enjoyed seeing all that action happening, and it was high drama.
Well, you know, I have to tell you, Charlie, as a competitor, as a former collegiate athlete, the thing I appreciated about Patrick Reed was just his demeanor and disposition. I watched all of his interviews post-round, you know, throughout the tournament, and he never got sucked into the hype as far as with the whole back and forth with him and Rory. I mean, he just stayed focused on managing and controlling what he could control, and he just said, you know, he's not competing against Rory or the other fellow competitors. It's just him and the golf course. He did not believe the pressure was on him.
You know, it's like he said, it's always self-inflicted pressure, and he and his coach and his team, you know, they've thought through this, and he's matured over the last 5 years since he came on tour, and he knows the value of a clear mind. He knows the value of just thinking about the game itself and what his performance is going to be and never get into results. And our great Jackie Burke from Houston always says,
oh, yeah,
Charlie, you know, those trophies are going to find you. You don't find them.
Hey, you're listening to the voice, golf teaching legend, the 2007 Teacher of the Year. His moniker is the Golf Doctor, and he is the director of golf at Champions Golf Club here in Houston. The great Charlie Epps with us tonight. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. You know what? We would love to hear from you. We are live at Twitter. You can join us at eRadio Sports, podcastarena.com. That is where you can find Charlie's program as well. And you can always email the show at info@eradiosports.com. Let's talk some more, Charlie, about Patrick Reed. I mean, did you believe that ultimately he could win a major championship? I mean, he's a very special talent.
Well, if you look at his resume so far, he was a champion junior golfer. He was a champion in college, won the national championship twice at Augusta State, the team leader, and his progression on the PGA Tour has been really great. And, you know, they don't give away spots out there. You got to earn them.
Yes.
He earned his spot. He's won five times, and he's matured every, you know, he's learned from his mistakes. He's made mistakes. Heck, we've all made mistakes. But we got to bounce back and learn from him, and he did. And moving forward, I mean, just look at what he's done in the Ryder Cup. He showed an incredible sense of drama up in Minnesota. He beat, you know, Rory up there. So he's somebody to be reckoned with for the, you know, in the future of the next 10 years of golf.
Well, Patrick Reed, it seems like he embraces the role of being the underdog, and that served as motivation to fuel his fire. I mean, because the expectations, they were not on Patrick. They really were on Rory going into Sunday. I mean, if you watched kind of that pre-tournament, you know, discussions going back and forth, everyone was picking Rory.
Yes, that's exactly right. And because they were anticipating, you know, him winning the Masters and becoming the fifth, sixth Grand Slam champion. And that weighed on him heavily. And, I mean, everybody who was anybody was there from Ireland anticipating a great celebration. And sometimes it just doesn't work that way. You know, the golf gods are going to reward the person that played the best. And Patrick Reed, he did it. And he was, you know, watching Roy, you know, Ricky Fowler. And Jordan Spieth, look at the round of golf he played. So, you know, you say, is the golf in a great spot? Yes, because there's great people and they're really enjoying the game.
Well, we will highlight here in just a moment talking about Ricky Fowler and Jordan Spieth, because those gentlemen certainly made serious runs on the back nine with Patrick Reed. I mean, they and what's interesting, you know, talking about Patrick Reed, I mean, he didn't waver. He did not flinch. But you brought up a good point, Charlie. You know, we're very proud. He lives here, what, in Spring, Texas, talking about Patrick Reed. And I would assume that your paths have probably crossed from time to time. One of the things I guess you really have to appreciate about him is just that unwavering belief in himself. I mean, he believes that he can win at the highest level. Where do you think that comes from?
You know, it comes from within. You know, you're not born with it. You dream about it. You work towards it. We had Patrick speak at the PGA education meeting at the Woodlands in February to all the local golf pros. And Patrick was just very matter of fact that, you know, he is doing what he wants to do. And part of that is handling pressure. Part of that is being competitive and also working very hard. You know, the great Michelangelo always wanted people. Everybody thought he was just a gifted artist and a painter, but he worked for it. And Patrick Reed has worked for what he has won. And that's what makes golf such a great game.
It is such an honor to have with us tonight the fastest 2 hours in radio, the Big E Sports Show, SB Nation Radio. Hey, we are going one-on-one with Charlie Epps. We know him well here in the Lone Star State. Golf teaching legend, 2007 Teacher of the Year, and he is the director of golf at the Champions Golf Club right here in Houston. And Charlie, this is so cool. We've got to talk about this with our listeners. Your student, Angel Cabrera, won the Masters in 2009. So let's hear and have you share, what is the strategy? What is that blueprint for winning the Masters? Because you've got to be very meticulous with your preparation.
Well, he had spent 20 years being a golf professional. He prepared. He went through all of the different phases and the ups and downs that sport gives you, but he never gave up. And in 2007, he won the U.S. Open at Oakmont. And then the next year, we were having lunch, and I said, Angel, you know, you're so good, you can win the Masters.
Uh-huh.
And he looked me straight in the eye. He says, how, Charlie? I said, we got to improve the way you practice. You know, and we improved his training and his goal setting and really got him on the right wavelength. And that Sunday at Augusta, he was prepared. He knew he had the opportunity to win. And he took it upon himself. I mean, and he took charge. And that's what we got to teach our youth. And you've got to be able to handle those situations with calm, because calm only comes from practice and being prepared.
Mm-hmm.
So the more you put yourself in that position, you've got to be prepared. And our young guys are getting to do that now.
My coach would always say the will to win is not nearly as important as the will to prepare to win.
That's it.
So talk to me about how do you prepare mentally? I mean, it's one thing to go out into the range or to spend extra time, you know, working on your chipping, your putting, things of that nature. But mentally, how do you prepare for this massive, you know, this type of event?
Well, you just have to put in your work. You have to play in the tournaments. You know, he probably had 100 hours, speaking of Angel, 100 hours of practicing putting from June of 2008 to March of 2009. And, you know, Tom Landry, and I got to play golf with Tom Landry one day. And,
you did?
And wow. I said, Coach, I said, what's your secret? He says, Charlie, you just got to convince your players that they're only going to play as good on Sunday as they did their practice on Wednesday.
Yeah.
It's not about Sunday, it's about Wednesday. It's not about Sunday, it's about Tuesday. It's about, you know, and that's it. I mean, there's no shortcuts. No shortcuts.
Golf and teaching legend Charlie Epps with us, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Check him out Saturday mornings. That's right, 9 a.m. Eastern time, that is. So I want to know, as we talk about Angel Cabrera and, you know, winning the Masters in 2009, what was it like for you as his teaching instructor, his swing coach, what was it like to go back to the Masters after he had won that following year? So many emotions, I assume.
You know what goose pimples are?
Yeah.
Huh? You know, sure. You just got to hit yourself in the head. Is this really real?
Mm-hmm.
Did that really happen? And it's still unbelievable. And this is 2018. You look back on fond memories. You learn. You probably didn't enjoy it as much as you should have. And even this week, I was with Angel all week long. And you know, we still enjoy his victory. And although he's in a slump now and he's trying to work out of it and he didn't make the cut, you know, you can't take those memories away. And the memories of Augusta and that victory are really deep in our hearts, you know. And Rudy Tomjanovich, I always liked what he said. He said, never underestimate the heart of a champion.
Yes, absolutely. You know? And I have to wonder, too, you know, I was thinking about Sergio Garcia coming into this year's Masters. So much has changed. He's married. He's a father now. You know, what are those responsibilities, you know, coming back, being the defending champion? And perhaps was there some advice for Angel that you provided for him? Because you want to be able to play good golf. But as you said, you know, perhaps you didn't enjoy it as much. I mean, you want to take time to, you know, absorb it and take it all in.
Yeah, I mean, after his 2009 victory, 2010, was a down year because he had to have his mouth redone. He had a dental surgery and he had 10 new teeth put in. So You have those kind of things that interferes with your practice. But then in 2014 against Adam Scott, you know, he ties him with a birdie on the last hole and then loses in a playoff. So he came back, and you know, you got to stay in the game. You got to come back, and very few people have ever repeated back-to-back. Nick Faldo did it. I think Nicklaus did it. Nobody else has done it in the history of that game. So Sergio is, and his mom and dad are great friends of mine. I've known them for a long, long time, and they're just enjoying, you know, his hard work, and Sergio will be back. He'll win another major. He could win at Carnoustie this year for the British Open, so because he lost in a playoff at Carnoustie. So I look for him to really play well there.
We will continue our Masters recap with golf teaching legend Charlie Epps after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Welcome back and good evening. Our number two, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Right now, we're going to continue our Masters recap with golf and teaching legend, our very own from SB Nation Radio, and that is Mr. Charlie Epps. Charlie, when you play the Masters, I mean, what's the mindset through those, you know, first 3 to 4 holes? I would assume you don't want to be overly aggressive. You want to get your round off to a good start. What's kind of some of those pearls of wisdom that you've given?
Well, you know, each player to his own, but I know Angel. And I've played the golf course, but I never played in the tournament.
Okay.
But I know you know you want to hit a good drive. Once you hit a good drive, you want to hit a good second shot. And it's just as the old cliche, one shot at a time. But it's still, you know, you want to make good decisions. Where Rory on the third hole on Sunday really made a rookie mistake where he left the ball short and sucked it off the green and made bogey.
Yeah.
I mean, and that was those little mistakes you don't want to make. A mental error is too costly in the first 4 to 5 holes. You just make good decisions. And because you got to trust your swing.
Hey, we're getting ready to wrap up our time. Charlie Epps, golf teaching legend. You got to check him out right here on our network, the Next Generation of Sports Radio. That is SB Nation Radio, the Charlie Epps Golf Hour, Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. And give me a quick hit on Ricky Fowler. I mean, he was so close, and we all want Ricky to win. He's one of our favorites.
Yeah, well, Ricky is still young. He's been out there almost 7 years.
Yeah.
And he's 27 years old.
Such a good kid.
And so he's going to mature. He learned a lot this weekend and finished second. And his time will come. I mean, he'll win. And if he wins, he'll win 2 or 3. He's going to be one of those type of players. And maturity you can't force maturity. You got to let it come. And he'll be there.
He is the golf doctor talking to Charlie Epps. So good to have him on our program tonight. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Check him out tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. Eastern Time, right here at SB Nation, the Charlie Epps Golf Hour. A true honor to have you on our program for the very first time. Thank you so much, Mr. Epps.
Thank you, and my name is Charlie.
Okay, yes, sir. I stand corrected. Okay.
Thank you, Melissa.
Of course. That was golf and teaching legend Charlie Epps with us tonight at SB Nation Radio, the Big E.